It's time for the big interview on the February 15th edition of Money Life. I am joined right now by Paul Espinosa. He is lead manager of the Seafarer Overseas Value Fund. It's ticker symbol SIVLX. And if you want more information, seafarerfunds.com. Now, we've had Andrew Foster from the Seafarer Funds on the show a number of times. But if you want to learn more as well about kind of how they work and how the value team works, well, go find Paul Espinosa on the Money Life Show recent and upcoming guest page. And there's a long link that will take you directly to some commentary about how they do their job at the Seafarer Funds. Paul Espinosa, thanks for joining me on Money Life.
Thank you, Chuck.
Paul, these have been tricky times domestically. And yet when it comes to the parts of the world that you're investing in, emerging markets, well, on the one hand, I can bring up any number of people say, look at the great opportunities there. And then I've got every bit as many people saying, ooh, there's a lot of potential trouble there. There's a lot of concerns. So right now, which story is the one that you think is the right narrative for emerging markets?
Good question, Chuck. I would say the following. I think it's a very dangerous game when you start trying to get into predictions of what market will do better going forward. In other words, U.S. versus emerging markets, which is effectively at the core of your question. Instead of making predictions, which, by the way, they always turn out to be wrong. That's why we try to avoid them. I would say instead we focus more on what we do, which is bottoms up. And what does that mean? We focus more on the fundamentals of prospective returns. Instead of predicting the outcome, we focus on, okay, what are the basis for prospective returns? And on that front, I would say, well, look, I'm obviously biased, but emerging markets look quite good to me. And why is that? I would say the following. Look at the book values. You know, people tend to say, hey, emerging markets haven't done well over the past decade, especially relative to the U.S. This is true. And while it may be a lost decade for investors, I don't think it was a lost decade for corporates. The reason for that is that they've built their book values very strongly. And what do I mean by that? They've accumulated returned earnings. They've grown dividends at the same time. But basically, they have a lot of cash in the balance sheets. And this means, going forward, that they can invest in CapEx if they want to, independently of whether dollar funding is available or not. And they can find their own growth opportunities even when GDP is slowing worldwide. That's really what you're investing in emerging markets. And consider, by point of contrast only, I'm not a U.S. expert, but we all know what U.S. corporates have done over the last decade, which is pay out a lot of dividends and a lot of buybacks. And that has come at the expense of returned earnings, no, by definition.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the exact opposite in emerging markets. They've built up the retained earnings, and that's what we're investing in.
And I would say, by the way, that I wasn't actually asking for a forecast. I was asking for a comparison, which is exactly what I got right there, where you're talking about where one market is versus the other. But in both cases, on both sides, there are a lot of worries right now that are geopolitical. And I'm curious, since you are bottoms up guys, how much do you worry about the trickle down? Or do you just say, no, 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 if we're going to go find the right values, we're not going to worry a whole lot about what's happening between the U.S. and China or what have you, because ultimately, if I hold it long enough, the value that I find in the company wins out. So it may delay my time frame, but it doesn't change my investment prospects. Is that where you're at?
Yes. And I would add a couple of ideas to that. What you said is perfectly true and correct. But I would add that, well, first of all, I wouldn't paintbrush all of the emerging markets as being characterized by the U.S.-China relationship. There's more countries there. Same thing applies to U.S.-Russian relationships, which are heating up these days. So we can be selective as to the countries we expose ourselves to. Furthermore, even if you go into China itself, let's say, where in the fourth quarter of last year, many investors face-planted, if you will, to use a crude term, in certain industries and certain companies. So as you well know, and your audience knows, China started, Beijing, the Chinese Communist Party started regulating certain industries, such as the education sector, certain internet companies, the real estate sector, and that has led to many companies in those sectors underperforming very significantly. That does not mean one cannot invest in China. And in fact, we've been invested in China and done well and avoided those potential pitfalls. No. So I would argue that if you're an active manager that is selective, that uses selectivity as opposed to a passive approach to emerging markets where you're buying everything, you can invest successfully, in our opinion, if you do your job well, of course. No?
Obviously, there is some measure of skill that goes into that. That's part of what we're looking at. When you consider the other things that are overhanging the globe right now, the whole world went into the COVID situation at the same time, but they're not coming out of it at the same time. And some very different approaches being taken in a few nations that are part of your core investment area. Then add in inflation, what central banks are doing, and the rest.
Mm-hmm.
What is your take on how the emerging market nations are really doing when it comes to getting through the pandemic and getting by inflation and not going through this with another, whether it's market or economic stop or simply just all the regular travails that come if the central bank is struggling?
I would offer the following, and that is, think about this, and I would have never predicted what I'm about to say, but coming into the pandemic, we had countries like China, Korea, South Korea, and Taiwan handling the pandemic very well, much better than we did here in the U.S., first of all. And economically as well, they should be coming out of it sooner because they came through it first and they managed it better. However, we are finding ourselves in the interesting situation that, again, I would have never predicted, where actually China is very much in lockdown, more so than many other countries around the world, whether they're emerging markets or developed markets. And you find yourself in a situation now where you have to think about the following, which is, well, look at the countries that handled the pandemic worst. India, South Africa, Brazil. Herd immunity seems to be in their favor now, funnily enough. And even here, we're starting to talk about whether herd immunity is enough to start not wearing masks as often as before, etc. So in that sense, I think one way or the other, we are coming out of it, even if it's through the worst possible way, which is herd immunity. That's as far as the pandemic is concerned. Then as far as central banks, you know, interestingly enough, I actually feel better about that. And that is because we're in a very unusual situation, in my opinion. And what is that? Consider that central banks around emerging markets have been raising rates ahead of the Federal Reserve for quite some time now. And this is very rare. Usually, the Federal Reserve sets the risk-free rate for all markets, mm-hmm. including emerging markets, right? And the Fed is, as you know from U.S. headlines, you know, U.S. CPI is running up very high to 6-7% type levels, and the Fed is still at 0.25, no, with the Fed funds rate. That is not the case in emerging markets. Emerging markets consider that not only are many central banks raising rates, again, ahead of the Fed, but two, very meaningfully. I mean, take a country like Brazil. Brazil has increased rates from 2 to 10%. Believe it or not, I mean, think about that. 2 to 10. Can you imagine the U.S. doing that? So what does that mean for investments? Well, on the one hand, yes, sure, Brazilian equities have struggled, and that's fine. I'm fine with going through that pain now. The point is that prospectively, you're looking at investing in a country where the currency is much more supported by rates. And that makes me feel more comfortable. Again, we're investing in non-US dollar denominated securities. So to the extent that central banks are actually being responsible and I'm not going to say ahead of the curve with inflation, but at least following with inflation, that makes me feel more secure from an investment point of view. And prospectively, well, you're looking at rate increases ending sooner than countries that have not raised rates. No?
Are we seeing with these changes in conditions that even though you are a bottoms-up investor, that there are certain industries, certain parts of the market, certain investment types that are much more attractive to you generally right now or much less attractive to you given these conditions?
That's a double-edged sword. Keep in mind that we are long-term investors. So we're not necessarily directing investments by saying, hey, you know, rates are going up in this country, try to avoid growth stocks and buy or leverage stocks and buy utilities or something defensive of that sort. No, and it's usually much more nuanced than that. Keep in mind that if rates are going up, inflation is going up. So our calls hinge much more on things like, as opposed to making a country call like that, let's take Brazil again, no, where rates have gone up a lot and inflation has gone up a lot. True, that's very true. But for example, there we own Ambev, which is the brewer, the primary brewer in the country. and it's a brewer that operates in Latin America as well. And this company, the stock price was hit precisely because of these concerns. You know, inflation is going up, the cost of goods sold are going to go up, and they don't have the pricing power, and so margins are going to come down. Well, we took the opposite view, and so far our call has been working, but we'll see prospectively whether it continues to do so or not. But we based the investment not on the idea that, hey, inflation is up, we should avoid this stock. On the contrary, we said inflation is up, the stock is down, and after conversations with the company and doing our research, we came to the conclusion that Ambev would be able not only to pass through all of the inflation, but more than that. And their market share, furthermore, would increase because competitors are not in as a strong position as Ambev to deal with the situation financially. And so we took the opposite view and bought the stock. So it's oftentimes, especially from a value perspective, you can use these kinds of, let's say, macro moves to get to the stock specific level and say, hey, maybe the stock is suffering for these macro factors. Is it warranted that we take the opposing view? And if we do our work well, you can find very attractive returns by doing that kind of work. You know?
Paul, great stuff. Thank you so much for joining me on Money Life to talk about it.
Thank you, Chuck.
That's Paul Espinosa. He is lead manager of the Seafarer Overseas Value Fund, SIVLX, the ticker symbol, seafarerfunds.com for more information.